This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, January 4th, 2011. I'm Caleb Brown. President Obama today signs into law new regulations governing how food gets produced in the U.S., but the FDA's broad new powers are largely at odds with the FDA's ability to get the job done. That's if the job can truly be done at all. Regulation Magazine editor Peter Van Doren offers his thoughts.
To me, some of what's going on here with this bill reminds me of the SEC and Bernie Madoff, in the sense that lots of tasks that our regulators are tasked with by the Congress are impossible, in the sense of the set of things out there that would have to be investigated. I think with Bernie Madoff, I read that there were 700,000 tips given to the SEC each year to investigate financial wrongdoing. There's only 3,000 inspectors in the SEC. So you work out the math. If an inspector would have to process something every, second in order to go through every possible thing that anybody had ever told it could be wrong with their financial system. The FDA, the figures vary, but a GAO report I read earlier today said there's 60 to 70,000 facilities in the United States that are subject to FDA food inspection authority, and there's around 2,000 inspectors. Okay. So again, that's 1/30.
And inspections to measure all of the things the FDA does, in fact, regulate would be very time-consuming.
Right. And so the task that the public and the Congress, in effect, want the agency to do is in some sense not impossible, but much more expensive than we're actually willing to pay. And the dirty little secret of much regulation is it's designed to make the Congress and the public, the public feel reassured, the Congress look good, and not spend all of GDP doing it. Now, that, of course, means every now and then you're going to have bad things happen. And this makes the agency look bad because it's supposed to be protecting you. It made the SEC look bad with Bernie Madoff. And in the recent food contamination scandals of the last few years, the FDA looks bad. It looks impotent. So part of this new law is designed to give the FDA so-called recall authority, which it doesn't have now. And the point of that is not to prevent anything, actually. It's simply when a contamination event occurs and it gets on the TV news, then the FDA can do what the police inspector does in the Casablanca, which is round up the usual suspects. I mean, it can do something. And that may be, from the agency's point of view, what this bill is about, which is to not let politicians and agencies look impotent and or stupid and or incompetent during times of crisis. Now, this is not the Cato view of the world, but the public seems to want somebody to do something when something happens, and the notion that you are largely responsible for your life and you should use market-like devices to figure things out. And you might want to buy branded items that give you guarantees of a private sort. That thought, while seemingly obvious to us, is not seemingly obvious to most of the American people. And instead, they feel better when something called the FDA or the USDA blesses the food that they have eaten.
One concern here is with producers, small producers, that is, people who don't use industrial methods that may not lend themselves easily to the types of parts per million regulation that the FDA sometimes does.
The right of center blogosphere was intensely worried about this. They argued against this law because it would invade every farmers market and volunteer fire department, apple pie festival, and the like. My own view is that those fears are unwarranted, not the least, regardless of the legal aspects of the law. But in fact, the Senate passed an amendment, which then the House accepted, which exempted all producers with 500,000 a year revenue or less, and those farmers who sold into markets 250 miles or closer to the farm, to the producer. And this embodies in law what's now known as the locavore movement, which is fashionable not on the right but on the left. And my point here is middle class approved things, whatever that is, in any current time and culture, they don't get slammed by the government. They don't get regulated by the government. It's minority things that get regulated. So when smoking was majority and popular among middle class folks, it was not regulated and it was not frowned upon. Now that it is not a middle class activity and it is largely an activity of lower income people, the political system slams it all the time and taxes it because lower-income people don't vote and they're not organized, et cetera, et cetera. So the notion that the government wasn't going to intrude on all sorts of activities that are culturally approved in middle-class life, I think, was never going to happen. Now, logically, maybe it ought to be in the sense that germs and viruses and contamination do not know the size of the producer. They don't know whether the thing is being transported 250 miles or not. So from a purely, let's call it, science-based regulatory point of view, which ironically is what Republicans are in favor of, science-based regulation, risks can be introduced into the food supply by Aunt Jenny and the volunteer fire department, as well as some corporate large entity. And so logically, one needs to ought to demand evidence from the producer, regardless of their size, that they have done things in an intelligent fashion. And so this exemption, even though A, it's not surprising to me, but B, it actually isn't science-based in that sense.
What these people, both on the left and the right, for lack of better terms, should want are suspicious consumers.
Exactly.
But they don't.
Consumers are suspicious, but again, because of what our colleague Gene Healy has described, I mean, basically the 20th century has seen a trend in our political system for something called the great man, or potentially the great woman, the president, to then take care of us and do stuff for us. And in turn, the Congress follows some of that. And the notion of sort of a Whole Foods model, which is our brand name, our goodwill, our profits come from trying to convince you that we've done a good job and here is our transparent procedures that we follow, and we go beyond the government. We show you the farm where this thing comes from, and you can go there yourself and try to see. And in fact, we have reports on file that say what goes on. That kind of private branding movement has not. Whole Foods does it to some extent, but that has not spread much to the wider food market, and it's, I think, disappointing and surprising to people like me that there haven't been more entrepreneurs that try to, in effect, privately certify various things that have been done on behalf of food safety.
Well, in many cases, aren't those private efforts later then co-opted by federal agencies?
Well, not always co-opted, but sometimes prohibited. I mean, what's interesting about there was a beef the Kobe beef market, right, in Japan. If you have a certain kind of beef and you can export it into the Japanese or Korean markets, it is extremely lucrative and profitable. And some farmers in the United States tried to, in effect, privately say they had techniques for certifying their cattle to be free from the bovine, the BCE, what's the mad cow disease. And the FDA actually restricted them from doing that because, again, what the FDA wants is a commodity-based, non-branded style of production, which is very useful for big agriculture as opposed to sort of branded producer-oriented agriculture. It's odd because you think of our wine industry, which is totally different, right? There are thousands of producers, each of which have brands, each of which are cultivated. And then think of milk, which is nothing.
It's homogenized.
It's homogenized. So the wine industry shows that it's possible to create branded identity and then convey quality information as a result of that. But traditionally, the other parts of agriculture have been very commodity-oriented and have used the USDA and FDA regulatory system as a way to sort of buy consumer comfort, if you will, on the cheap.
Peter Van Doren is editor of Regulation Magazine and a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. You can read or subscribe to Regulation at cato.org.